Yes, folks, we've gone to the dogs. Welcome to Historical Hystericals. Today, looking at Laurel and Hardy. Yes, good evening, every or good afternoon, or is it good morning? I can never remember. Welcome to Historical Hystericals. I'm Chris Brennan.
And I'm Commander Mike.
And today we're looking at...
the fantastic team of Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy. Oh, it takes me back. Many years ago, afternoon matinee movies at home. Was great.
We'll just get through some housekeeping first.
Yes.
If you'd like to contact us, you can email us on commandermike356@yahoo.com. Our website, commandermike356.podomatic.com. Or you can keep in touch with us through Facebook. Just look up Historical Hystericals in Facebook.
Yes, we're technologically advanced. You can reach us virtually anywhere. And we may even pop up on Twitter one of these days. You never know.
Oh, dear. The publishing arm is getting bigger and bigger.
Well, I've been told I'm a bit of a twit anyway, so what the heck?
not by me. You're way taller than I am. Okay, so how are we going to tackle this with the boys? I'd like to start off with Stanley.
No, we'll start off with Ollie.
No, I really want Stanley. Tell you what, we'll toss a coin for it. I've got a coin here somewhere. Let's see. That's easy. Heads I win, tails you lose.
Heads I win, tails you lose.
Okay, here we go. Up.
Right. Yeah.
Tails you lose. We start with Stanley.
Oh, no, come on. That's, no. Look, two out of three.
Two out of three? Okay.
Two out of three. Heads you win, tails I
lose. Up it goes.
I lose. Two out of three.
Heads I win. Two out of three. Yep. Easy. Okay. We're talking about Arthur Stanley Jefferson. He later became known as Stan Laurel. He was born June 16, 1890. Now, let's see. Stan was born on June 16 in North Lancashire, England. His parents were both active in the theatre and his home life was a happy one. His early years were spent much of the time living with his grandmother and his father, A.J. Jefferson. Now, he managed a number of different theatres. This is where Stan got his natural affinity for the theatre, with his first professional performance on stage at the age of 16.
Such a young starter he was.
Well, it's one of those things that the passion took over when he went in. So he approached the local theatre manager, Mr. Albert E. Pickford, to try out on his theatre sideshow museum. Now, Stan got the try he was looking out for, but when he got out, looked at the audience on his first night and saw his dad at the back of the hall. Now, yeah, Stan wasn't too sure about this because his father really wanted him to go into theatre management just like he did.
Well, of course, Dad would want him to follow in his footsteps.
Of course. So he went home not too sure how he was going to be received when he got home.
Wouldn't you like to have been a fly on the wall that day when Stan comes home? There's Dad in the corner in the armchair.
As it turned out, he needn't have worried. Dad wasn't all that discouraging about the idea of Stan taking on the stage.
Woohoo, go Dad.
Yeah. Let's see, in 1907, Stan entered his the first of a number of travelling groups with a grand old salary of £1 a week.
Oh, he's in the big time.
Now, up until 1910, he was wandering around with various travelling groups. But in 1910, he joined Fred Karno's troupe of actors. Now, they were sometimes known as Karno's Barmy Army. Now, it turned out he was a bit player alongside a young man named Charlie Chaplin.
Isn't it funny how this happens? You find these famous people who have worked alongside other famous people, and yeah, it's amazing the way the world is intertwined.
Oh yeah. Now it turned out that Stan was actually playing Chaplin's understudy there for a while. Then the Karno troupe toured America and brought both Chaplin and Stan to the United States for the first time. Now, unlike Chaplin, Stan immediately left the Karno troupe and remained in the United States.
As you would.
Now, it was here that Stan started to write his own material and, along with some other actors who also left with him, started touring with his own acts.
Now, from 1916 to 1918, Stan teamed up with Alice and Baldwin Cook. Now, these two became lifelong friends of his, but it was around about that time that Stan met another person who would be a major impact in his life, Mae Dahlberg.
Oh, yes. Now, May was another performer, but was married at the time to her husband in Australia. Now, even so, she and Stan soon became romantically involved. Now, like Chaplin, Stan would become involved time and time again with a woman unsuited to him. That's a pleasant way of saying it, isn't it? She was unsuited to him.
That's one way of putting it. She was a bitch. But anyway.
Yes. Now, May was detrimental and abrasive, which caused damage to the couple both personally and professionally.
Behind every great man, there's a bitch. I mean, a woman who's pushing him forward.
Yes. Now, it was about this time that Stan adopted the stage name of Laurel. Now, according to some sources, it was at May's suggestion.
Another story goes that Stan Jefferson, the name he was going by, he noticed had 13 letters in it. Now, being a bit of a superstitious sort of person, he thought, nah, 13 letters, can't go with that. So he changed his name just to Laurel.
Now, while Stan and May were performing together, Stan was offered $75 per week to star in two real comedies.
Now, going from £1 a week up to $75 a week, that's a big jump.
Well, yes, but you've got to really consider that he was getting £1 a week in 1907, and now we're talking about 1917. So it's 10 years of slogging away.
True, true.
This is the thing a lot of people don't realise, is they came to America and made their fortune. Yes, but with a lot of experience and knowledge and stuff behind them. They just didn't walk on and become a superstar.
Unfortunately, it doesn't just happen like that.
No.
We're living proof.
Yes. Okay, let's see. After making Stan's first film, Nuts in May, Universal offered him a contract. Stan accepted and created his first screen persona, Hickory Hiram. The contract, however, was short-lived and was cancelled during the reorganisation of the studios. So Stan and May returned to their vaudeville act. Although he later worked with Bronco Billy Anderson, one of the films made with Anderson was The Lucky Dog, where Stan was briefly on screen with a supporting actor, someone by the name of Oliver Hardy.
Never heard of him.
No, not yet. No, I never had. It would be many years before the duo would act together again, creating the world-famous team of Laurel and Hardy. Oh, I've got a great story about that tune later on, too.
Cool.
We'll get to that later.
Okay.
In 1924, Stan had forsaken his stage career to work full-time, now under contract to Joe Rock. Now, the contract called for Stan to make 12 two-reel comedies. The contract had also one unusual stipulation, that May was not to appear in any of the films. By this time, it had become obvious to everyone who knew Stan that May's temperament was hindering his career. In 1925, when May started interfering with Stan's work, Joe Rock offered her a cash settlement and a one-way ticket back to Australia, which she accepted. Now, without any distractions, Stan finished the 12 films ahead of schedule. Although he was still technically under contract to Joe Rock, Stan tried then to join with Hal Roach Studios as a writer and a director. Now, due to the contract with Joe, he could not act in any of the films.
That's got to be a bit rough when the head of the studio comes along and says to your wife, excuse me, would you mind buggering off?
Well, you've got to remember, too, they weren't husband and wife. She was still technically married to the guy back in Australia, and they were just, you know, shock horror for that era, let's just say cohabitating.
That would have been very, very risque back then, too.
Oh, yes. Well, this is why actors in that era were known as undesirables. Actors were thought of just above street thugs as...
What do you mean in that era?
Yes, well, there are some actors that fit again. Moving on before we get some letters from solicitors.
Well, someone throws a phone at us.
Stan began directing films at the Hal Roach Studio, including a 1926 production called Yes, Yes, and Annette. This starred another new addition to the Hal Roach Studio called Oliver Hardy.
He's back.
Their paths have crossed again. Now, while he was directing, Stan couldn't stay away from the camera himself for long and started acting again. This initiated a short-lived lawsuit between Hal Roach Studios and Joe Rock, and Stan himself was in the middle. Eventually, it was all sorted out, and he found himself working more and more with Oliver Hardy, although not yet as a team. Now, let's see, that takes us up to 1926. Also in 1926, Stan married Loris Nielsen, so his love life has gone back on the on track again. That was only one year. Only 1 year after May had been offered her little journey away.
So he must have obviously had very deep feelings for May. Can we get on to Wally now?
Yeah, I think we're pretty much at the stage where they join up, so we'll just wind the Wayback Machine back a little bit further and have a look at Oliver's early days.
Thank you, Mr. Peabody. Oliver Hardy's early years. On January the 18th, 1892, Norvell Hardy was born in Harlem, Georgia. Now, it wasn't until many years later that he adopted his father's name, Oliver, as his own. Now, it was as a tribute to his father that he never actually knew. Now, his father was not a healthy man, and he died less than a year after Norvell's birth. And, well, honestly, with a name like Norvell, you'd probably change it as well.
Yeah.
Now, his mother, Emily, was left to provide for her five children. So there was Norvell and four others. And his mother moved to Madison, then on to Atlanta before settling in Middle Edgeville. Now, how do you come up with an unlike Middle Edgeville?
They're Americans. Forgive them.
Well,
they know not what they do.
Now, that's where she took over the running of the Baldwin Hotel, not part of the Alec Baldwin franchise yet, I don't think. And it was there that Norvell took up the habit he later referred to as lobby watching. Yeah, well, I don't know about you, Mike, but I don't mind. Now, this may sound a little bit freaky. I don't mind going down to the food court at the local shopping centre and just watching people. And you just see people's mannerisms and you watch the way they interact. It fascinates me. It's, yeah.
It's much more fun when you watch people older than 16-year-old girls.
I don't do that.
Anymore.
Yeah, not since the lawsuit. Anyway, moving right along. Young Norvell was not an easy child to raise. He was not interested in education, although he acquired an early interest in music and theatre. Now, that's probably from his mum's tenants, because, you know, people in and out of the hotel, you know, all sorts of musos and actors coming in and out. But he ran away from home to join a minstrel group, and although he soon returned home, the love of performing never left him. But neglecting his school and running errands for the guests at the hotel, he saved money to go and see shows. As you do.
Of course.
His mum recognised he had a talent for singing, and she sent him to Atlanta to study music and voice with prominent musicians. But Norvell skipped his lessons. He's really, really got a thing for skipping lessons, hasn't he?
And there's something else he has in common with us.
Yes. And he went on to sing in vaudeville houses. He was sent to military college, but ran away from there. And after toying with college and the idea of studying law, he decided to follow his dream of a singing career.
I don't remember him singing terribly much.
Oh, he had a fantastic voice.
Yeah?
Oh, brilliant. Really, really great voice. In some of the French Foreign Legion films that they do together, he actually had some sections written in for him to just sing. And he had for a guy his size, he had the voice of an angel.
That's right. Sons of the Desert.
Yes.
I'd almost forgotten that.
There's one for you to pull out and have a look at.
Oh, yeah. In 1910, the movie theater opened in the future Oliver Hardy's hometown of Middle Edgeville. That is a mouthful, isn't it?
It is. Middle Edgeville.
Middle Edgeville.
You've got to be drunk to say it. Middle Edgeville.
Oliver became the projectionist, ticket taker, janitor, and manager. But I dare say he did all those three things and he got one wage. He soon became obsessed with this new motion picture industry and became convinced that he could do a better job than the actors he saw on the screen. A friend suggested that he move to Jacksonville, where some films were being made. In 1913, he did just that, when he worked as a cabaret and vaudeville singer at night and at the Lubin Film Studio during the day. Now, it was at this time that he met and married his first wife, Madeline Salhosin.
Oh, I wonder if she worked in Mooresville.
So the next year, he made his first movie, Outwitting Dad, for the Lubin Studio. He was billed as O.N. Hardy, taking his father's name in as a memorial. He was also known as Oliver Hardy for the remainder of his professional life. In his personal life, he was known as Babe. Now, he insisted that the nickname was given him to by an Italian barber who applied talc over Oliver's cheeks and say, "A nice baby." In many of his later films at Lubin, he was billed as Babe Hardy as well.
Now, it was in 1915 when he made 50 short one-reel films at the Lubin Studios. What's the difference between a one-reel and a two-reel? Probably the length of the film.
About 3 minutes.
Yeah. Now, he later moved to New York and made films for the Pathé Casino and the Edison Studios. But he returned to Jacksonville and made films for the Vilm and King V Studios. This guy was all over the place.
Well, you had to be in those days. You couldn't, you know, unless you got a contract with a studio, you just did bit parts wherever you could. It's called jobbing actor. You just did a job wherever you could find it.
Jobbing an actor? Yeah, we can do that. Now, he worked with Charlie Chaplin imitator Billy West during this time. And in 1917, Oliver Hardy moved to Los Angeles, working freelance for several Hollywood studios. It seems like he's been freelancing all over the place, but now he's in Hollywood freelancing. The next year, he appeared in the movie Lucky Dog, produced by Bronco Billy Anderson, and starring a young English comedian named Stan Laurel. Now, this is where the two intertwine and mesh together. Oliver Hardy played the part of a robber trying to stick up Stan's character. Okay. They didn't work together again for several years, eventually forming the famous team of Laurel and Hardy.
So between 1918 and 1923, Oliver made more than 40 films for Vitagraph, playing the heavy, or the tough guy, for Larry Sherman, another Charlie Chaplin imitator. Now, you've got to remember, at this stage, Charlie Chaplin had made such a big impact. There are so many different people coming along impersonating Charles to be a Charlie Chaplin-type character, and it was just rife with impersonators.
In 1919, he separated from his wife, ending with divorce in the 1920s. Now, due to Babe's infidelity, things weren't going so well on the home front.
Oh, theatre people.
Well, the very next year, Babe married again. Obviously, heartbroken over his first divorce, he married Myrtle Reeves. Now, this marriage was also unhappy, with Myrtle becoming, unfortunately, a bit of an alcoholic.
In 1924, Oliver began working for the Roach Studio, where he made some of his best films, working with the R Gang films and Charlie Chase. In 1925, he was in a film called Yes, Yes, Nanette. Where did we hear that before?
I wonder.
Yeah, it was the one directed by Stan Laurel.
In 1926, a hot leg of lamb changed the future for both Laurel and Hardy. Now, Oliver Hardy was scheduled to appear in Get 'Em Young, but was unexpectedly hospitalised after being burned by a hot leg of lamb. I don't even want to go there. Stan Laurel, who'd been working as a gag man and director at the Roach Studios, was recruited to fill in. Stan kept appearing in front of the cameras rather than behind it, and later on appeared in the same movie as Oliver, called 45 Minutes from Hollywood, although they didn't share any scenes together. So, hot leg of lamb brings the two together. I don't know. Stranger things have happened, but yeah.
Now, in 1927, the team of Laurel and Hardy was officially born on film with the release of Duck Soup. Now, that's no relation to the Marx Brothers movie of the same name. The film was based on a sketch written by Stan Laurel's father called Home from the Honeymoon. Mm-hmm. Another birth happened in Stan's life on December 10th, 1927. It was his daughter, Lois. So here they are. They're finally teamed up. 1927. By the time they produced their first Laurel and Hardy film, Ollie was already 35 and Stanley was 37.
Now, that's pretty late in terms of, what would you call it? The use-by date of an actor?
Well, yeah, back then, they looked at the talent more than the youth. Today, we are very much youth-oriented. And speak to the casting agents. Now, unlike Oliver, Stan was immersed in every facet of movie-making, from writing, directing, and editing the final cut. Now, Stan Laurel's character of Stan also developed slowly over time. Now, in Duck Soup, his character, although it was named James Hives, is similar to Stan, although not quite finished. In the next few films, Stan, under various names, became more developed into the team of Laurel and Hardy. For example, his characteristic hair scratching first occurred after filming The Second 100 Years, in which Laurel and Hardy portrayed convicts, complete with shaved heads. Now, as it grew back in, it itched, so he started scratching it, getting laughs from the people on the set. So he added it to screen Stan's repertoire.
Isn't that amazing how little things like that can happen? I mean, obviously, it's just a natural thing. You only scratch the head because it's itchy, and it becomes part of the character and the mannerisms.
Wonderful stuff. So unlike many of their contemporaries, Laurel and Hardy were able to make the transition from silent movies to talking pictures very smoothly. Their first talking film was Unaccustomed as We Are. Now, other classic talking Laurel and Hardy features followed, including Another Fine Mess, a personal favourite. This feat is more amazing considering the hectic pace they worked at in the Roach studio. So, yeah, they were really churning them out.
Although the pace was hectic and Stan Laurel didn't have the creative control that he desired, Laurel and Hardy's time at Roach Studios was prolific. Profitable as well, both personally and professionally for the guys. So Stan arranged for his longtime friend Alice and Baldwin Cook to be hired by the studios. Now, they appeared in several of the boys' most well-known films, such as A Perfect Day, Be Big, The Bohemian Girl, and Babes in Toyland as well, I think. And that was also known as The March of the Wooden Soldiers. So they dragged Alice and Baldwin in to give them a sense of family in the studios.
Oh, lifelong friends.
Yes.
Okay, let's have a look. In 1930, personal tragedy struck. Lois gave birth to a son, Stanley Robert, but the child, who was 2 months premature, died 9 days later.
Oh, no.
Despite his grief, Stan began filming Pardon Us. This was Lauren Hardy's first feature film shortly afterwards. And then in December 1931, Stan began filming The Music Box.
Now, I can imagine with most people, when your grief hits you hard, you pour yourself into the work to try and get yourself through it. But The Music Box is the famous film where the boys have to move an upright piano up an enormous staircase. This is hilarious stuff, I tell you. The monumental staircase in the film still exists in the Silver Lakes districts of Los Angeles. So if you're over there, have a look. It's between 923 and 937 in Vendome Street. That's Vendome Street. There are 131 steps, and it even has a plaque commemorating the fact that Laurel and Hardy made the film there. That's classic stuff. I love it.
If you check out YouTube, you can actually see someone's put film together of what's there today and spliced it with what they filmed back then in 1931. Now, you can see buildings have come up where there was a vacant lot next to it. Buildings have come up, but the original building on the right-hand side is still there. The stairs are still there, and it's a mecca for Lauren Hardy fans. They go along there just to check out the staircase. It's called the Music Box Staircase. Big sign up there as well. Oh, it's brilliant.
Now, the Music Box won the Oscar as the Best Short Subject of 1932. And now only such honour bestowed on Stan and Laurel, Stan, Laurel and Oliver Hardy film.
Yep, their only Academy Award.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to say. And it was also the first short film to be honoured. So that's a pretty big thing. Now, what people don't know is that in 1935, Tit for Tat also received a nomination in the same category.
Unfortunately, they didn't win, but they could have.
They could have. That's the important thing. We could have been a contender. Sorry.
So in 1932, Stan felt the need for a vacation and decided to visit his father back in the United Kingdom. He took Ollie and his wife, Myrtle, and the vacation was turned into a working tour with enormous crowds greeting them everywhere they went. Now, two things happened on this holiday. It was on this holiday where Stan and Ollie developed their friendship. They'd been working together for ages, but spent very little time together socially. So this changed during the tour, and the two comedians became the best of friends. The other thing that happened, which is amazing, they were so big in England, they had no idea how big their reputation had preceded them. So when their ship arrived in England, they were amazed to see thousands and thousands of people to greet them on the docks, and the city churches pealing out their tune, the cuckoo song, on the church bells.
I can imagine being immersed in the studios. The guys are pretty flat out making the films. They're not going to get out that much to actually see people's reactions. I mean, they'd know they were popular, but the full scope of the reaction of the general public wouldn't have actually hit them until they were actually out in the public, which has obviously happened here in England.
Yeah. And to see thousands and thousands of people in another country and the church bells reduced them both to tears. Now, speaking of his friendship with Oliver, I'll just quote Stan Laurel here. "Babe was like a brother to me. We seemed to sense each other. Funny, we never really got to know each other personally until we took the tours together. When we made pictures, it was all business, even though it was fun. Between pictures, we hardly ever saw each other. His life outside the studio was sports, and my life was practically all work. Even after work was over, I loved editing and cutting the pictures, and sometimes he wasn't interested in. But whatever I did was tops with him. There was never any arguments between us. Never." End quote.
Isn't that brilliant?
Amazing. So,
now, upon returning from the tour, Stan Laurel resumed his hectic work schedule, filming some of their finest short films, including Sons of the Desert. Now, that's the one we mentioned earlier where we actually get to hear Ollie Singh, and Busybodies, among many others. His marriage to Lois suffered, and in the spring of 1933, Stan met Ruth Rogers. Bit of a playboy, you got to think, young Stan.
Oh, a serial monogamist.
Yes, yes. Now, the two began seeing each other socially, and Ruth began visiting Stan on the set. Lois filed for divorce in October. Now, in addition to all this, now, this is Lois, divorce, the whole thing going on, Stan's brother had moved to the USA years before and was working as Stan's chauffeur. He died during a dental procedure. You go in to get a tooth pulled and you cark it. How bad is that?
I'm glad I didn't read that before last week.
Oh, you went to the dentist?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. Now, that was all in 1933, but in April of the next year, Stan and Ruth got married.
Now, in 1936, Oliver's personal life suffered another blow as he and Myrtle divorced. Now, in August, Stan and Laurel began filming of Babes in Toyland, one of Lauren Hardy's most beloved films. However, this children's film exacerbated the tensions between Stan and the Hal Roach studio. Hal Roach had written the original story, which Stan thought would not work terribly well as a vehicle for Lauren Hardy. After numerous discussions, Stan wrote his own storyline, further alienating himself from Hal Roach.
Ooh.
In 1935, the boys began working on Bonnie Scotland. Stan's wife, Ruth, visited on the set frequently and even made the suggestions for their next film, a comedy western, to be called Way Out West. Now, however, like Stan's previous attempts, his marriage ended in divorce the following year, despite Stan and Ruth's obvious love for and affection for each other. And to add insult to injury, May Dalberg returned from Australia and sued Stan for alimony. She was saying that she had been Stan's common law wife from 1919 to 1925. Now, as if this wasn't enough, his contract at Roach was about to expire, and he didn't care for the provisions that were being put in the new contract.
All fun and all joy. Now, 1936, Oliver Hardy's personal life suffered a blow as he and Myrtle divorced. There's divorce all over the place for these two. It's happening. Now, Stan was involved in every aspect of creation of motion pictures, including writing, directing, sound effects, everything. But Ollie loved golf. Ollie was out playing. If there was a free day, he was out on the golf course. He used to play with golfing partners like Bing Crosby, W.C. Fields, Babe Ruth, Chico Marx, everything. He was a really good golfer, too. He used to play a lot of the celebrity tournaments, a lot of the pro-ams and things like that. He was there all the time. And if you can imagine Ollie in a pair of check pants out on the golf course, hilarious. I've seen film of it. It's funny.
Something that today's golfers are continuing in his name.
Yes.
Back at the Roach studio, Stan didn't want to extend his contract under the existing terms, and Roach insisted on including a couple of morals clauses. Perhaps not unreasonably, given that the amount of time the negative publicity generated by Stan's marital differences.
Mm.
So as a solution, Stan formed the Stan Laurel Production Film Company, which had non-exclusive contract with Hal Roach Studios. So the first film for the new company was made for Roach, which was called Swiss Miss, which went into production in December 1937. So just to prove that an old dog can't learn new tricks, Stan got married again on January 1st, 1938.
Oh, God.
To Vela Iliana Shakovova.
Oh, I'm so glad you got that name and not me.
I should have looked at that earlier. Shuvalova.
She, of course, came from Oliverville.
Oh, dear. Okay, we'll just move on. We'll just call her Vera, shall we?
Yeah, please, yeah.
At this point, Stan's life starts to read like one of Lauren Hardy's scripts. So Ruth flew to their honeymoon hotel, raising a ruckus that their divorce wasn't final. So there he is on his honeymoon with Vera, and Ruth flies into the hotel room.
Oh, hang on a second, darling. My wife's here.
Now, she's ranting and raving, saying the divorce wasn't final. In reality, it had become final a few days previously. Now, like May, Vera had a nasty temper and brought trouble on Stan's head almost immediately. Predictably, they were divorced in May of 1940, so a two-year marriage.
Oh, unbelievable. But it's 1939, Stan Laurel refused to renew his contact with Hal Roach Studio. So he's all over the place. He's back to Hal Roach again. And Roach had kept each of them on separate contracts, with each set to expire at different times. Now, I can imagine the idea behind that is, well, if you don't renew your contract, his contract's going to be coming up for renewal. So they'd be putting pressure on each other to keep the contracts going.
Exactly.
Now, Roach felt that this gave him the maximum control over the team of Laurel and Hardy. But Stan had finally had enough. While waiting for the issue to be resolved, Oliver Hardy made the film Zenobia with Harry Langdon. This was, of course, a really, really funny film. Check it out if you can. Is that on YouTube, Mike?
Or? I haven't seen it there, but it's a good place to start looking.
Have a look. You'll probably find it. Very, very funny film. Have a look at it. And eventually, Stan got his way, and the boys were both signed to new contracts together, and the team was loaned out to General Service Studios to make Flying Deuces, or Deuces, one of Laurel and Hardy's most well-known films. Now, after Stan insisted on a major rewrite, he was a very, very accomplished writer. This is what a lot of people don't get. They always think Laurel and Hardy, and they always look at Hardy as being the leader and the man in charge of everything. It was actually Stan. Stan was the guy who did the writing. He did the editing. He was the major driving force behind the team. And after he insisted on this major rewrite to make it more adaptable for the Laurel and Hardy comedic style, it became a major hit.
And this is so true with so many of the teams, Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin. Jerry Lewis was the creative one that wrote and got everything together, because they had the background of knowing what was funny and what would work for their characters. Yeah. Anyway, while on the lot of Flying Deuces, Babe Oliver fell in love with a girl called Virginia Lucille Jones, at last a name I can say. She was a script girl who he married the very next year.
Oh, my God. These guys should have had a revolving door on the chapel, I tell you.
Seriously, the first film that Laurel and Hardy made back at the Hal Roach Studios was A Chump at Oxford, in which Stan Laurel plays both his lovable, dim-witted character as well as an intelligent professor.
Ah, now is that a bit like the Nutty Professor type thing? Maybe.
In general terms, but not that specific.
To Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Not so much.
No, oh, okay.
The two distinct different characters, not the same person changing.
Oh, right, okay, I'm with you.
Their next film was Saps at Sea, which was to be their final film for the Roach Studios. Their contract expired in April 1940, and the very next step was to go on a national tour from September through to December. In each of the 12 major cities they performed in, reviews were favourable and the crowds were enthusiastic. In January 1941, Stan remarried Ruth Rogers.
He remarried Ruth in January of 1941.
Yeah,
true love.
Remarried the girl he divorced earlier.
Right. And he then again divorced her in May of 1941.
Well, I think he just likes honeymoons.
I think he might. That might have been it. Maybe he just loves Niagara Falls. I don't know.
I think they were both a bit confused, because in 1943, Ruth filed for divorce again, only to withdraw the divorce suit later on.
Hang on. Are we still married, darling, or what?
Let's fill out the forms and let the bureaucrats figure it out.
Yeah. Oh, confusing.
So in 1945, Ruth filed divorce yet again, which was granted in 1946. Shortly afterwards, Stan Laurel married yet again to a Russian opera singer, named Ida Kitaviva Raphael.
We'll just call her Beth.
Yeah. Ida's a lovely name.
It is.
Now, this marriage was different from all the other ones that Stan had been through. It was successful. As Ida said herself, no more divorces for Stan Laurel. And Stan was truly happy in this marriage, perhaps for the very first time.
Now for the bad news. Unfortunately, for Laurel and Hardy, no major studios came knocking at their door to sign up some new contracts. Despite their popularity, as evidenced by their national tours, the studio tastes had changed. In April of 1949, they received a non-exclusive contract from Fox Studios, calling for one motion picture with the option of 9 more over the next 5 years. Now, when you think of the amount of films these guys have been churning out, that's not a lot. But Stan and Ollie accepted the contract, and they came to realise the disadvantages of working for a major studio. Now, unlike Roach Studios, there was no creative input. Now, this would have absolutely devastated Stan, because Stan no longer had control of the film, even to the limited degrees that he'd had with some of the films that they'd done at Roach. Now, also, they were seen as relatively small cogs in the Fox machine. How can you think of Laurel and Hardy as being small cogs? That's just amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah, now, there was none of the family atmosphere that they'd taken for granted at Roach Studios, and they were actually buttonholed into making B-grade movies.
So, with their film career at a standstill, Laurel and Hardy toured Europe playing the driver's license sketch written by Stan. Initial plans were to play 2 weeks at the London Palladium and 4 weeks at various provincial theatres, for a total of 6 weeks. However, they were so successful, the tour was expanded to 11 months.
Ugh.
Laurel and Hardy played the Coliseum in London, then Denmark, Sweden, France, Belgium, and they didn't return home until January 1948.
In 1949, unfortunately, Stan discovered that he had diabetes. So that's a little known fact for you.
Hmm. So also in 1949, Oliver Hardy's friend John Wayne asked him to play a supporting role in his latest film, The Fighting Kentuckian.
Oh, howdy, Pilgrim. How'd you like to be in my movie?
Yeah. So, yep. I would have paid money to see that conversation. So Oliver had worked with John Wayne and John Ford in a charity production of a play called What Thrice Glory a few years previously. So Oliver initially refused due to his loyalty to his partner, but Stan insisted that Oliver take the role, which he did, and did quite well. Have you ever seen that film? It is brilliant.
Isn't it great? You're tied into a contract with this guy. You've been working with him for so many years. This opportunity comes along for you to do something fantastic, and he turns around and says, go for it.
Yeah.
Now, that's what true partnership is all about. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Mike? Absolutely.
Now, by the way, I've had an offer from one of the stations here. No.
Dream. So have you ever seen The Fighting Kentuckian?
I may have back in the dim, dark past. But
The best way to describe it, it's a Davy Crockett type scenario, with John Wayne playing the Davy Crockett role and Oliver playing the sidekick. It was a really, really good film. Loved it.
One to check out.
Definitely, check it out.
Now, all of their films, of course, can't have been brilliant, fantastic hits, can they?
A surprisingly large percentage of them were.
What about Atoll Cay?
Oh, dear. Yeah, that is in the other category of not so much.
This one was politely described as a disaster.
And that's the polite. Oh, dear.
Polite, yeah. Now, while not the worst film ever made, the opening scene in the lawyer's office is really quite good. You've got to check that out. But the film as a whole is probably the worst film that Laurel and Hardy ever made. The script required a major rewrite by Stan, so Stan probably stepped in to save the day to a certain degree. And both Stan and Ollie suffered serious medical illnesses during the filming. Yes, they read the script and they threw up. No. The fact that there was a multinational cast and they didn't speak a common language, that probably helped. You know, okay, we will cut the film now, okay? You what?
Here's another little known fact. Stan was instrumental in the career of a young performer called Marcel Marceau.
Yes, he walked in and said, shut up.
After seeing Marcel perform in Paris in 1950, Stan praised him as an unsung genius and helped Marcel gain the attention of the French press.
Once they returned home, they spent some time recovering their health, as you would. It's a pretty grueling sort of timetable they've been working under. And in 1952, they did another tour of England, doing a new sketch by Stan Laurel based on Night Owls, one of their 1930s films. And the tour was so successful that they returned the next year with another sketch by Stan. However, during the 1953 tour, Stan was taken seriously ill and was unable to perform for several weeks. In May of 1954, Oliver suffered a slight heart attack, which cancelled the tour. Now, this was the last tour that they did due to the health reasons that they were suffering.
So in 1954, you got to remember that in May 54, Oliver had a heart attack. In December, they are surprise guests on This Is Your Life.
Oh.
Stan later said it was a staggering experience. We'd been planning to do something on TV, but weren't certain what we'd do. We never intended to start out on an unrehearsed network show. Now, I've got a copy of that on the old videotape, VHS videotape. And that is the most fascinating program, because this was done before videotape. This was a live television show. Now, they got Stan and Ollie into a hotel next door to the TV studio and to meet a manager or someone. And all of a sudden, a camera crew and lights and this sound of a host comes bursting out of the kitchen area saying, "This is your life." Then they said, after this commercial break, we'll have Mr. Laurel and Mr. Hardy in the studio. Well, they come back from the commercial break, and they're not there. And you see about 4 minutes of this poor host trying to stretch in a cold sweat. They're not too far away now. They're coming. And now, what had actually happened was Stan refused to go in until he knew exactly what was going to happen, because he didn't want anyone sending up their work or taking the pee out of them. Mm-hmm. He wanted to know exactly what was going on. Once he was certain that it was going to be a tribute and an honour, then they came on stage. But to see this guy sweat for 4 or 5 minutes was hysterical. It's something you really got to see.
Now, this is, of course, Stan's creative control stepping in, where he was doing all the writing and the producing and the editing and everything, and he wasn't about to let them be made fools of.
No. Even if it was their last engagement, their first last professional appearance as a team.
That's sad.
Yeah. So let's see. In 1955, Laurel and Hardy were planning a television series, The Fables of Laurel and Hardy, based on children's stories. Now, this is to be produced by Hal Roach Jr. These plans were postponed when Stan suffered a stroke in 1955. Now, when he recovered, and then in 1956 was planning to get back to work when Oliver suffered a major stroke. Ollie was paralysed and confined to his bed for several months.
Oliver Hardy, or Babe to his friends, and Ollie to people all around the world, sadly died on August the 7th, 1957.
Now, Stan was under his doctor's orders due to his own ill health and was unable to attend the funeral of his longtime friend and partner.
Oh, that'd be heartbreaking, wouldn't it?
So, after Oliver's death, Stan realised he would never work again. Although he kept busy writing gags and sketches for fellow comedians, he was recognised with a special Oscar for his pioneering work in the field of comedy in 1961. Then Stan Laurel passed away on February 23rd, 1965, a few days after suffering a heart attack.
Now, an interesting side note, after Ollie had passed away, Stan actually had a bit of a fetish for stationery. He loved paper, he loved envelopes, and he was in a stationery store, and he was going through all the stuff, and he went up to the counter, and the guy at the counter looked at him and said, "I know you." Now, remember, this is Stan we're talking about. He said, "I know you. You're Oliver Hardy." And Stan just looked at him and got the biggest grin and said, "Yes, yes, I am." And then he walked out, and he later said that it was the biggest tribute he could ever get to be called Oliver Hardy. He thought it was the biggest compliment to be thought of as being this great man that he admired, obviously, so much.
He was a comedian to the very last in so many ways. Just minutes away from death on February 23rd, 1965, he told his nurse he would not mind going skiing right now. The nurse was a bit taken back and said, "I'm not aware that you're a skier." He said, "Well, I'm not, but I'd rather be doing that than having all these needles stuck into me." A few minutes later, the nurse looked in on him and found that Stan had quietly passed away.
Mm.
Now, late in his life, he hosted many visitors to his home. The new generation of comedians and celebrities, they included Dick Cavett, Jerry Lewis, Peter Sellers, Marcel Marceau, and Dick Van Dyke. Well, Dick Van Dyke even gave the eulogy at Stan's funeral.
Well, now, not a happy occasion being at Stan's funeral, but can you imagine the guest list? I mean,
Yeah, the who's who of everybody at the time.
Now, Laurel and Hardy did 106 films together. This doesn't include the films which Laurel directed, Hardy, newsreels, home movies and TVs. Now, that's just the feature films that they did together.
So remember last program we were talking about A Mad, 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 Mad World, Stanley Kramer's great comedy, and I said that so many people were ringing up trying to get a part on it? Stan actually turned down a cameo part when it was offered to him. Like he said, he would never work without Oliver Hardy again, and he never did.
Friends to the end.
Mm.
Now, I have noticed in some of the bigger department store chains at the moment, there's DVD sales on, and they have Laurel and Hardy box sets. There's Series 1 and Series 2. So if you can get down there, I think they're only Australian, about $13, $14. If you can get down there and check them out. And they've also got Abbott and Costello box sets there as well. So check those out. Grab them. Have a look. Worth having a look.
And Three Stooges. Anything from that era is becoming public domain. So it's A, cheap, and mostly they've been remastered and look fantastic.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And while you're checking out some of Laurel and Hardy's films, have a look at some of the other actors that appear in them. People like Gene Harlow, Robert Mitchum, Peter Cushing. You know, I mean, the list goes on. All these famous people keep on cropping up in all these movies all the time.
There's a marvellous one with Margaret Dumont, who was Groucho's foil in all the movies. She showed up with Oliver and Stan, so it was great.
Oh. And thus endeth the story of Oliver and Hardy.
Yeah. One other story I just thought of. Oliver Hardy is the big golfer. He loved his own golf. He'd even set up a little putting green on set so he could practice between takes.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, Stanley once joked to a reporter interviewing him that golf was Hardy's only bad habit. And the reporter asked him if he'd had any bad habits, and Lowell, who'd been married and divorced 5 times, said, "Yes, I have bad habits. I married them." So there you go, folks.
No comment on that one.
Stan Lowell and Oliver Hardy, the life and times thereof. I mean, it's amazing that almost 100 years after they made their films, we can still look at their films and still generate laughs from them, and they are so, so funny.
I highly recommend that you try and get down and get some of those the DVD box sets and have a look, because there's some classic footage. I know it's black and white, people, but TVs used to be in black and white, so you couldn't tell the difference. But get down, check them out. They are brilliant.
And there's also the access to YouTube, various other things on the internet.
I've got to ask, Mike, do you have shares in YouTube or
something? No, I just love looking up the old stuff because it's so hard to get your hands on some of these things. I mean, The Music Box, that wonderful, wonderful film that they got their Academy Award for, putting that baby grand piano up those stairs, is an incredibly creative piece of film. And to think they did it, in the 1930s. Incredible.
Without safety nets or stuntmen.
Exactly. And there's one where the piano starts rolling down the stairs. Oliver's running ahead of it, falls down, and it rolls over the top of him. No stuntmen, no massive special effects. It was really done on a shoestring, and they're incredibly funny.
Ouch. So that's it for another episode of Historical Hystericals. We hope you've enjoyed learning about Laurel and Hardy as much as we've enjoyed telling you about them.
We'll have another episode not so long between episodes in the future. I hope we'll try and get this happening more often. If you have any comments, you can send us an email at commandermike356@yahoo.com, or you can check out our website, commandermike356.podomatic.com.
That's it. Or check us out on Facebook. Just go to the main Facebook page, do a search for Historical Hystericals, and bingo, there we are.
Sign up as a friend there, and we'll notify you whenever there's a new episode being posted up.
Oh, for sure. And who are we going to tackle next? Do we know?
I've not got a clue, but maybe this time we won't tackle someone who's already dead.
That'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
Keep
ending these shows on a downer, and it's like, no, let's not do that.
Let's find someone alive. We'll talk about them.
Okay, until next time.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Have fun.
Bye.